Welcome to Menopause Reimagined. I'm your host, Andrea Donsky, and I'm a nutritionist for more than 16 years who's in menopause. I'm a menopause educator and avid menopause researcher. The goal for this show is to help empower and educate you as you enter into perimenopause and menopause so that you can take control of your health and your symptoms. I'm also the co-founder of WeAreMorphous.com. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Barry Tan. He's hailed as a trailblazer and the world's foremost expert on vitamin E. He's a scientist with a degree in chemistry and biochemistry. His research expertise includes lipid-soluble nutrients like carotenoids, vitamin E, and omega-3s, and how they impact chronic conditions. Now, here's Dr. Tan. Welcome to the show, Dr. Tan.
Oh, good morning. I'm great. I'm happy to be at your show and discuss about the wonderful things about vitamin E, tocotrienol.
You know, as a menopause researcher, I have really spent the last 5 years digging deep into ingredients. My passion is nutrition, lifestyle, and I always say supplements. And when it comes to supplements, specifically ingredients for women in perimenopause and menopause, I'm extremely passionate about that. And one of the ingredients, I came across it probably about, a couple of years ago, and I had heard about its incredible benefits for hair growth and heart and stroke and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I was intrigued. So I dove into the research about it. And whenever I recommend anything, I try it. For the most part, I try things first. And I've been taking tocotrienols for the last year and a half. And I have to tell you, it's something I recommend tocotrienols to everybody on my lives, on TikTok. I've noticed sometimes we can notice right away when we're taking things like, oh, I could feel that or I can't. For me, and I know the research, I believe it says over 8 months, it starts to show hair growth. So I'm so excited to have you on. I'm so excited to have you on because today we are going to talk about tocotrienols and its incredible benefits. So let's start with your story. How did you discover it?
I started my career at the University of Massachusetts, professor, not very far from where you live in Toronto. And I was studying oil and lipid. And when you study oil and lipid, they have antioxidant. So unexpectedly, we know that tocopherol and tocotrienol are antioxidant for oil and fat. However, most of the vitamin E found in oil and fat are tocopherol, which is one group of the vitamin E. Yep. And I study the lesser known one, which is tocotrienol. There are four of them, four tocopherol, four tocotrienol, like that. And at the time, I was studying different vegetable oil. And I noticed that every time I stumble on something, they tend to be the lesser known one called tocotrienol, not the tocopherol. So it piqued my interest, and then I started to do research on them, and then I begin to find that the tocotrienol vitamin E have differentiated properties from tocopherol. So therefore, at the university, I started to look at that. That was in 1983, almost 40 years ago, and then I have persisted from then on to this point. So, and then I found one kind of tocotrienol, and then the better kind, and eventually I ended with the best kind. So hopefully in the discussion, you will ask me lots of questions on this last.
Okay, so it's not often I actually get to speak to the person who discovered the ingredient. So that's why I'm very excited today. Okay, so let's start with its benefits. I know I mentioned a couple off the top. Actually, you know what? Let's start first. Let's start with what is tocotrienols. You mentioned it's from the vitamin E family, but why is it important for our bodies? How does it help us when it comes to our health?
Okay. When it comes to in the body, most people know vitamin E as an antioxidant, like that. And then later I will try to correct you why it is not known as a vitamin E as an antioxidant, but people know them as an antioxidant. For that it is. Just think of a cell. We have about 38 trillion cells in our body, approximating to 5,000 times the population of the Earth. So if you think of a cell like that, it has a cell wall, and inside the cell would be nucleus. It make you look like your parent, me look like my parent. And then they have mitochondria. It make energy. People know that. And then they have other things that are strange sounding things like Golgi apparatus, endoplasmic reticulum. All those are machinery within a cell to make protein so that the cell function properly. Right. So if you think of a cell and the cell wall, just think of it as a gated community.
Okay.
If you have a proper gated community, nutrients will come in and waste will go out. It generates waste and waste will go out. If you do it right, the whole thing will function properly. Most people don't talk like that. I think that this is correct, and people forget and talk about this, that, and other mechanism, but this is very simplistic. Now, I mentioned the cell wall several times. If you were to get all the cell wall, about 80% or more of the cell wall is a fat. FAT, fat or oil. The USDA say that we have three food groups, fat, protein, and carbohydrate. And we kind of know less fat is good, less carb is good, protein is generally good for you and not stash in the body. Whatever you don't use, you get rid as urea. And then keto diet, this and another thing. Another time, we're not to talk about that. I simply want to talk about this. We want our protein, fat, and carbohydrate to come in and not go bad, which means not oxidized.
Right.
So of these three food groups, the easiest to go bad is the fat, not the protein, not the carbohydrate. If you don't believe me, you have a stick of butter on a hot summer day, that off smell. You drive past a roadkill on a hot summer day, that smell. Even if you have a hunk of steak on a summer day, that first off smell on the hunk of steak, deliberately, if you uncook steak, it would be the off smell of the fat first. So all this to say, the fat will be the first to go.
Okay.
Now you go back to that gated community. 80% is the fat. So you need the fat to be protected, otherwise the gated community will become dysfunctional. In the 1980s, there was a professor in Austria. His last name is Esterbauer, Helmut Esterbauer, I think. So very Germanic name. And he decided to figure out, he will extract all the antioxidant from the cell wall like that. I am pretty sure you've not heard of this, but he extracted all the cell wall. And then he found out that greater than 90% of all the antioxidant in the cell wall are vitamin E molecule. The remaining less than 10% would be all good, CoQ10, lutein, lutein, beta-carotene, lycopene, like this. So all this to say, the cell wall that are protected by antioxidant, they all look like vitamin E molecule. Now, that should help the audience. You probably heard that everybody and the, I say this a little bit tongue in cheek, everybody say their dog and their grandmother is an antioxidant. So it's very confusing. But the antioxidant you need to know is the antioxidant that protect the cell wall, because the fat is the easiest to oxidize. And those kind of antioxidant, they look like vitamin E molecule. And now I'm actually coming to answer your question. Here is an example of a vitamin E molecule you see here.
So for those of you who are listening, you can see Dr. Tan. So we have this interview on YouTube as well. So if you want to go, I put a link below. You can go watch the interview if you want to see what Dr. Tan is holding up. But perhaps you could explain it, because we have people who are listening on the podcast as well. If
okay.
You can explain.
So if I purposely go off screen and where the red dot is, that's an antioxidant. That is the piece that sticks out into the cell membrane. In the gated to guard against the invaders, so to speak, the oxygen. Now I go on the other screen. See that? I go on the other screen. Notice that? Now you have the black color, which is a carbon, sorry, and the white color is a hydrogen. They are very lipid soluble. So this part here sticks right into the cell membrane, so it's anchored in there. If you look, there's a double bond here. See, there's a double bond here and a double one. There's three of them on the tail. That is the part that makes it a tri means three, enol, triene. And if it's a tocopherol, it will be longer tail without the three double bond. So all that to say, a tocotrienol, a shorter tail, anchors less deeply on the cell wall, and the tocopherol anchors deeply in the cell wall. Which means that in the cell wall here, a tocopherol will spin around like this. A tocotrienol will spin around much faster because the tail is shorter like that. So they both capture the bad guys. The tocopherol will be like a local policeman because they don't cross other
I was
township.
just going to say, can you give us like the actual analogies? That's perfect. I was going to say like one is the guard and then, okay,
Yeah,
continue.
and then the tocotrienol, because it's got the shorter tail, it will function like a state trooper. It'll go the entire state. So
Okay.
therefore, and it spins around the cell 50 times faster. So a tocotrienol is 50 times more potent than a tocopherol. That would be the simplistic reason and also an accurate reason how a vitamin E tocotrienol protect the cell wall. The cell will function properly with a propagated community. The ingredients will go in, I mean the nutrient will go in and the waste will go out. And in
Okay.
doing so, the cell will behave properly. And when all the cells in the body behaves properly, we will function normally. And that is my understanding of the proper growth of a person, the proper aging of a poor person. So when a person's gated community is not good, then chronic conditions will set in as we age. So in a short, I hope that that is a simplistic enough and still accurate to describe why this kind of antioxidation is important.
Now, you know, when you talk about antioxidants, you talk about the guard, you talk about the state trooper. You know, vitamin E, so you were saying, so let's think of it for simplicity, for thinking of it into simple terms, is that is an antioxidant, but there are other antioxidants as well, right? That, you know, we have in our diet. So like vitamin A, vitamin C, like, can you just talk really quickly to those as well for, in case the word antioxidant, I mean, for our community, we might've heard the word antioxidant, but we may not understand it completely when it comes to what those ingredients are.
Okay, when you think of antioxidant, just think of it in two manner. If you put a drop of oil in a glass of water, the oil floats to the top and the water is in below. So in the space of chemical and in antioxidant, there is oil soluble antioxidant and there's water soluble antioxidant. An example of a water soluble antioxidant would be vitamin C. Well known, if you put vitamin C, it just dissolves in the water. If you put vitamin C in oil, it's not going to dissolve because it's not oil soluble. And then a glutathione is water soluble, like that. But that's good enough. Oil soluble antioxidants are more. Vitamin E will be oil soluble and like that. And lutein, zeaxanthin, beta carotene, lycopene, they're oil soluble. These are color material like that, which is why if you were to cook a carrot on a pan with oil and the oil will begin to look yellowish orange color because the oil extract the carotene into the oil. So you know it's a lipid soluble.
Right.
Because our human body, we need our oil to be protected. I mentioned to you before, approximately 30% of our weight is fat, and that fat need to be protected. I keep saying fat because among the three major food group, fat, protein, and carbohydrate, fat is the easiest to go bad. So it needs the protection.
Yeah.
In the water side, approximately 60-70% of our body is water, so therefore vitamin C. So you have heard many podcasters talk about take vitamin C, 100% agree. So therefore, in the water-soluble regime, you need vitamin C. In the lipid-soluble regime, probably the best-known one that you need would be a vitamin E-type molecule. And here, to explain to you, in the vitamin E, the most potent one would be the tocotrienol vitamin E, not the tocopherol vitamin E. And the most potent of the one that you can get this kind of tocotrienol is from annatto.
You know, I think what I find interesting, I think vitamin E is kind of like, you know, it's the superhero, but it doesn't get nearly as much attention as, let's say, you know, vitamin D, vitamin C, like some of these other ones, right? And that's why I was excited to do this today, because it really is It really is a superhero. So let's go into what some of those health benefits are. So I mentioned off the top that it's been amazing for hair growth. I know that there's a research on fatty liver. I know that we talked about insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome. So as we go into perimenopause and menopause, so many of us have symptoms in that realm. So we might be losing our hair or having thinning hair. We're more prone to insulin resistance, right? We're more prone to fatty liver. So let's go into how vitamin E and specifically tocotrienols can help those symptoms.
All right. I'll say the one that of a highest interest to the group of people listening to you. And this is with full disclosure. I'm probably the person who have taken tocotrienol longer than anybody else that I know. And then you can see I have no hair growth. If anything, I lost hair. So for men, it would be androgen. So it doesn't help in this. I'll tell you how it was first known that tocotrienol help in hair growth. People were doing skin cancer. And when they were studying skin cancer, they have nude mice, mites that do not have hair growth. They're supposed to have hair, but these are nude mice that have no hair growing on it because they don't have to shave the hair and then they can do the study. So when they did this, remember the study is on cancer. It actually killed the melanoma, the skin cancer. But in the process of giving the mice, they noticed that these nude mice, they genetically figure out not to have hair growth. They start to have hair growth. So then people say, oh, wait a minute. There is an ability for tocotrienol to help people with hair growth. I think that this would be particularly, as you indicated, women with menopause because they are not androgenic. They're estrogenic instead. So that would help as opposed to the strong androgen thing in men. I didn't see if it is, I would have hair on my hair. That doesn't mean that it wouldn't be true of women. So now on the menopause and postmenopausal side, besides hair growth, oftentimes in the menopausal period that she experiences hot flashes. These are autosomic condition. That means your body cannot control. Normally, your body control. If you work hard, then your body temperature rise. But the control of your normal stable body temperature is autosomic. You cannot control it. Cannot control meaning that when you go to bed at night, your heart beat at a certain rate. You continue to breathe. You can't control that. So that's autosomal, automatic. Like that. So when you have hot flashes, you're not telling your body to increase in temperature. Something is out of kilter, out of whack for the top temperature to go up and then you sweat like that. There was a Michigan doctor. He gave to his patient and within 2 weeks, the hot flashes dropped. So we have no published study on this. This is performed by somebody else different. I thought, wow, that's very curious. And since then, we also noticed with another compound that we have called Geranol GG, it also do that. So we raised that piece. However, you also asked about chronic condition. Most of the study that we have done, at first, about 100 study or so in animal study, the audience at why animal study, we don't usually start with human study because human study are long in the making and they're very expensive. So we do a lot of animal study first. And so when we sum up all the animal study, they seem to come around on chronic condition. That means as we age, which means when a woman is in her 40s or 50s, even pre-menopausal like that, it begin to show up. It seems like the health of our life peak at about 30, men or women. And then thereafter, the maintenance period is if we're healthy, then it could be 30 to 40 years, and then there'll be a slow go down. And if we don't take care of our health, then the maintenance area is very short, 10 years or less. And then we have a longer period of going downhill. So we noticed that the tocotrienol work on chronic conditions, and the chronic conditions that we have studied are dyslipidemia, then the lipids in the body go up and down, cholesterol, triglycerides, this kind of thing. And then metabolic syndrome will be sugar, normal high, but not high enough to be diabetic. So then we begin to study people with pre-diabetes, diabetes, and finally, in the last 5-8 years, we mostly study people with fatty liver disease, which is a clear subset of people with metabolic syndrome. So I have all of this, and now the last study we are doing in Texas is men and women with BMI 30 to 35. That means that they are in the first, second stages of obesity. Mm-hmm. When they carry some, this is not a judgment. It is, when people carry so much weight, it is a huge burden on their system. So we're trying to figure out if we give them tocotrienol, you know, how this might help them to reduce particularly inflammation. So that is the last of our tocotrienol study to manage obesity. But we have all this. So how about I pass it back on to you? You tell me which one you want me to discuss, then I'll discuss that particular one.
All. Okay. And also we have to cover heart health and stroke, because I know there's research around that too. So, and that's also something that we're more, okay. So why? Okay. So let's go, let's start with insulin resistance, because that is such a huge issue. And so many people in the United States have it. And obviously as we get into perimenopause, we're more prone to it. So why don't we start there?
Okay. Insulin resistance. In the 1990s, I met a professor. His name is Gerald Reven. He was a Stanford endocrinologist. He was at the American Diabetes Association to get an award. He was just unraveling the understanding at the time, Syndrome X. Remember, it was during the time we have lots of movie X-Files. The word X is very sexy. But then they didn't know what this thing was, so they called Syndrome X. He unraveled Syndrome X, and then it became called metabolic syndrome. And one of the hallmarks of metabolic syndrome is insulin resistance, exactly as you said. So there were so many people wanted to talk to him after the talk. I never got to him. So I tried to sneak in as he was exiting. I caught him, and he didn't like that because he was trying to catch his flight back to California, you know. So he only gave me one sentence. If you understand this sentence, you got it. I'm actually trying to explain this. So he said, I'll tell him what he said, and then I'll say in plain language what he meant. He said, hypertriglyceridemia always precedes hyperglycemia. So in short, that means you will have high triglyceride in your blood first. If it's not controlled over a long period of time, eventually it will have high sugar. But you usually don't first have high sugar. Then I got it. So when people have high triglyceride, that is metabolic syndrome. But by the time you have high sugar, the floodgates open, then you have type 2 diabetes. So, but of course, during type 2 diabetes, you still have high triglyceride, but now you burst the seam, the sugar has gotten high. So then I said, okay, now knowing that, then the first study that I would do would be a pre-diabetes, which is a metabolic. In insulin resistant, ladies and gentlemen, it just means this. When you eat food, the food breaks up the carbohydrate into sugar in the blood. When it's broken up into sugar in the blood, it will stimulate the pancreas to produce insulin. And the insulin is a chaperone. It will just hold onto the sugar, bring it to the cell, and deliver it to the cell, and the cell will have energy. That's all the insulin does. It's a good thing. And by the way, the person who discovered insulin and got the Nobel Prize is a Canadian, and is from Hamilton, Ontario, in the 19, I've forgotten when it was like that. So that set the pace of insulin from the pancreas to do the job they do. But insulin resistance means the sugar is produced after we eat a meal, and then the insulin is produced, but the insulin cannot recognize the sugar. So it's just floating in space, you know, and then cannot hold onto the sugar, and therefore the sugar is not delivered to the cell, which is why insulin resistance means your sugar stay in the blood and not going down. That's it. So we gave people tocotrienol in pre-diabetic. Clearly, they are insulin resistant. First, we measure sugar, and the sugar drop. I like it, you know? And then we study people with type 2 diabetes, the sugar also drop. Then when we study type 2 diabetes, this is when a scientist come into play. Wait a minute. So if the sugar drop, that is good. But you know, it's the insulin sensitivity increase. That means it's a different question. In other words, is the insulin functioning properly? There are two ways to measure that. If you take food, if your insulin is very high and your sugar is not dropping, that's not good. Usually when you take food, your sugar go up, your insulin trace right behind it, and then your sugar drop. But if your sugar is high and your insulin increase, and then the sugar not dropping, not good. So when we gave people tocotrienol, we first saw the sugar drop, and we also saw the insulin drop. That is very good news, Andrew. That means the tocotrienol is not just lowering the sugar. It is, listen to this, is potentiating the insulin. So now the insulin is increasingly functional again, not insulin resistant, insulin functionality. I am super happy to report that. So we saw that in pre-diabetic and we saw that in diabetic.
So Dr. Tan, so we, now was this in animals or this was human with these clinical
studies? This is human study.
Clinical. Okay.
Yes.
So a couple of questions around that and then we'll go into the others. So did you take into account diet, or was this, you know, had nothing to do with diet? It was strictly looking at their insulin and their glucose, but not measuring, like, were they changing their diet? Were they, you know, removing fats or sugars from their diet while you did this research?
No, we did not do that. Okay. On the diet piece, it's like that. Sometimes you design a study, you tell the patient specifically, you should not eat so much, you should do da-da-da-da-da like that. We did not do that. The dietary part is advisory. We ask them to eat a normal, healthy diet, which means that it's not control, it's just advisory. So okay. if the audience must insist, so it is diet control or not? It is not diet control.
Okay.
But I'm sure if the person just eat food to completely out of whack, then the tocotrienol may not be able to help them. I should at least say, but it was advisory and most people kept the advice. You know why? Because if they are out of kilter, we will see that the weight at the beginning and the weight after 3 months would have gone way up. We didn't see that.
Okay.
And then on this one here, even though you asked that, I know you may die to ask another question, I think it's very apropos. After we did this, Andrea, we decided to do a very important subset of people with metabolic syndrome, insulin resistant, is fatty liver. Why did we choose that? In the United States, adult American, 90 to 100 million people have fatty liver disease. It's silent. It's hard to figure out your fatty liver disease. So without saying and point, I'm not here to shame anything. I'm just trying to give the signs, you know. I love people. I want them to be healthy like that. If a person is shaped like an apple, then it's probably not good, because it's surrounding where the organs are. The organs are getting fatty. If the person look like a pear, it's not congratulatory, but that's not where the organs are. So that's it. So if you got it, then you got it. So we recruit people who are clearly fatty liver. That means that the triglyceride is high, like I indicated to you, and they do ultrasound and they can see fat storage, all this. And then the liver enzymes are high because the liver is stressed by the fat there. So we decided to recruit people who have fatty liver disease. We did over 8 years. This is a labor of love. Over 8 years, we did 3 clinical trials, but I do one at a time. A 3-month study, published. A 6-month study, published. And then
it.
A 12-month study, published. You're not going to get this from anybody else. But why
it.
Am I? Because I am so fastidious about the tocotrienol doing well. I do not want people to take something that is like a snake oil. I want it to work, you know?
Yes,
but even when it works, I still may have a hard time getting the FDA to approve, but at least I can have the paper published. And they're all published. So yes. In the first 3-month study, we measure AST, ALT, basically it's liver stress enzyme. The people that the doctors look, and those enzymes drop about 15 to 25%, roughly 20%. And then we also measure the triglyceride drop. I was happy. And then my science director noticed something, and she's good in noticing. Then I said, well, Anna, don't talk to me on this. I cannot pay attention to that. But then I said, let's design a 6-month study. Because why do I do that? Because the liver is the largest organ. I need to know that it also worked longer period. We did a 6-month study. We continue to measure everything we measured before. This time we have ultrasound, like you see a baby in like that. So we can see the fat thing. Now the fat also dropped. Then we also, in addition to the liver enzymes like that, the triglyceride and the sugar like that, we also measure inflammation, C-reactive protein. It also dropped. We also measure oxidized fat, also dropped.
Amazing.
So, okay, this is amazing at 6 months.
Oh my God.
And then my technical director tell me again, Barry, did you notice that? So I'll tell you, I keep that last to say, he said, yes, I noticed that, but I am leery about making a statement like that. So I finally decided with my technical director, let's do a 12-month study. So the 12 months after that, I will hang my hat and make the strongest claim I have. And 12, by the way, 12-month study doesn't take 12 months to do. 12-month studies take 36 months to do, because you have to recruit, and then the last person you recruit will be the last one out. So there'll be another 6 months. So because you don't get, like, you know, 100 rats, and then all of a sudden, these are human beings. You have to recruit them, randomize, ask them all kinds of questions, and then the dummy pills, this and that. So the 12-month study after 3 years was done. We published that. Everything I said to you before happened. In addition, we have CAT scan. So we actually scan and can see the liver and can see the spleen and can see this. They all stack. And of course, the thing that my director saw with also was there. So at 3, 6, and 12 months, clearly the tocotrienol helped to reduce inflammation, fibrosis, and steatosis of people with this. And the one that my technical director say was, Barry, the 3, 6, and 12 month patient, they lost weight.
Oh,
the reason I resisted on saying that is because the moment I mumble the word weight loss, people are expecting it to be 1 month. I don't have a 1 month data. So okay. Then Anne just told me, just tell people exactly what we have. So what we have is that at 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months, they consistently and sustainably lost weight from 10 to 15 pounds. This is published, and I'll talk about this in my next presentation on this is an Integrative Health Symposium in New York City in February. This is not funded by anybody. This is a symposium of health, and they asked me to talk because this finding is important. And so this is it. So even though, did you know that I'm so fastidious, I did not even have one of the endpoint at weight loss. The endpoint that I have was, does it reduce inflammation? Does it reduce the metabolites in the blood? Does it reduce a steatosis, which is fat in the liver, and fibrosis? All these are music to the ear. It did. But then weight loss happened. So how do I explain it? So let me say this and then I pass back to you. I don't think that tocotrienol directly is a weight loss product. The reason the patient have weight loss is because their body metabolism is so out of kilter, as would be somebody with perimenopause and menopause like that, because the estrogen dropped. All of her life, it wasn't like this. And then during menopause drop, and then certain things in her metabolism will go out of kilter, and then putting on weight is not to be so unexpected. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to calm it down like that, so as the metabolism and inflammation calm down, and so is the adjustment of the weight. And for that reason, that's a beautiful way to have weight loss. So I'm actually thrilled, even though it's not part of my endpoint that I studied, and it was a good side effect, shall I say.
Well, it's a very big issue. So first of all, I was going to say, you know, it makes sense because if you're becoming more insulin sensitive by taking tocotrienols, then it makes sense that the weight loss would accompany it, right? So it's kind of tied into that whole insulin resistance. You know, I'm going to share a story with you. And then I do want to ask you dosages. So people might be listening going, wait, I need to know how to take it and how much. And we're going to get to that. So everyone, we're going to get to that. So my story with tocotrienols is when I first heard about it, I heard it from a colleague. His name is Bryce Wild, who's a very good friend of mine. I've had him on the podcast before. He talked all about male menopause, and I'll link to that below as well. I remember this distinctly. I went to the doctor and I went for my annual checkup. This was several years ago, and I had been in menopause, in perimenopause for many years, and I didn't know it. And then when I started getting hot flashes, I started trying all these different ingredients. And one of the ingredients that I tried was black cohosh, and I did it for many years. Anyhow, I went to my doctor one year, this was several years ago, and she calls me and she's like, Andrea, you have fatty liver. And I was like, what? What do you mean I have fatty liver? She's like, yeah. And so we did an ultrasound, confirmed I had fatty liver, and I couldn't understand it. And as a nutritionist and somebody who researches, I mean, this is my career. I'm like, fatty liver, I didn't change anything. I didn't do anything. So, you know, I kind of dove into the research and I found out that long-term use of black cohosh can lead to fatty liver. And obviously, as we're more prone getting into this stage of life. So I called Bryce and I'm like, Bryce, what the heck, man? Like, I have fatty liver. Like, what the heck? How come I have fatty liver? He's like, well, so we had a whole conversation. He's like, you know, I just read all of this research on tocotrienols. You should try it. So I'm like, okay. And he's like, and the research shows that it can reverse fatty liver. So I went off the black cohosh. I went on to the tocotrienols and it reversed. So I can say firsthand how using tocotrienols actually did reverse my fatty liver. So I'm a fan. Like, after that, wow. I never stopped taking it. I was like, that's it. I'm taking it, because just for that alone, it's awesome. But now you're talking about, I didn't realize the insulin sensitivity. I didn't realize, like, the metabolic syndrome part. I didn't realize any of the other stuff is, you know, the weight loss. So to me, and I knew about the hair growth, because that was another story that someone had told me that, you know, really helps with that. So I started on, you know, I started taking it for that reason as well. So anyways, that's my story. And I just think it's such an important
on that story of yours. That is a good story. You should talk about to other people. As you were talking that story, I'm reminded of something. If you, besides eating a lot of fatty food that give that get fatty liver, just think about how fatty liver can come about that is not diet related. You mentioned taking black cohosh. People who drink a lot of alcohol have liver cirrhosis. That's fatty liver. People that take a lot of medication for good reason, for other thing, can make bad things in the liver. And when the liver is very stressed, it becomes fatty. So that is the background of fatty liver. So actually, you trigger me to think about something I had forgotten. I have mostly telling the audience to say, if we take a huge amount of fat and carbohydrate, that kind of fatty liver, because NAFLD, NAFLD, non-alcohol fatty liver disease, is so awkwardly put, because it's a fatty liver caused not by alcohol, that is by diet. However, alcohol causes fatty liver, and when we take substance outside our body consistently for long period, like medicine will do it, and black cohosh probably in your case for that. So the moment you stop taking it, that will actually calm down your liver, and so this tocotrienol could be a healing effect to your liver. And then you come back to kilter like that. So remember, for the audience, if you want, do not get confused with this fatty liver condition with tocotrienol, with a lot of liver product out there that are liver detox. So when people talk about liver detox, ladies and gentlemen, they are talking about they have a pesticide exposure, they have lead, mercury, blah blah blah, and they need detox on those. Those are also important. By the way, on those things, tocotrienol also work. But the one that I'm talking about that toxify your liver is not those kind. The one I'm talking about is that we eat high fat, high carb diet, and that cause fatty liver condition. And that's why the Mayo Clinic, when they discover this condition, is called NAFLD, so awkwardly put as non-alcohol fatty liver disease, and that is dietary concern. This is just an important thing. I don't have fatty liver, but I take tocotrienol. To the best of my knowledge, my liver is functioning really well. The enzymes are low, my triglycerides are low. So that's a blessing. So thank you for sharing that part. What you just shared is very important, Andrea.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. So, okay, bone density. I want to cover that because that's another thing I know you have research on. And again, something that many of us are prone to, obviously losing our bones as we get into perimenopause and menopause.
Okay, why did we do bone mineral density? That was initially we were not, there are so many studies that one can do. We have to pick and choose. At the time, there were like 70 to 100 papers in animal study that they gave to the animal, some by Gavage, some by, they did all kinds of things. They ovarytectomized the animal, which means it's postmenopausal. They orchiectomized the male, which means they take out the gonads, and then they have many, many, and then they've smoke induced this and that. They did all of this study, and every time when they gave them tocotrienol, the bone density improved. So I decided that, man, we need to do a clinical trial. So we worked with a Texas professor. So she recruited postmenopausal women. I believe that there will be like 45 to 55 year old like that. And then we gave them tocotrienol. And then we gave one group 300 milligram, the other group 600 milligram. And then a 3 month study, so we can only see marker. The bone changeover is about once every 2 years. And even you may not see bone dropping this and that over a 5 year period. So you can only see marker of it like that. So we did the 3 month study. So in short, the bone growth, there's bone growing and the bone canceling. And because the bone is organic, they change the bone growing and the bone breakdown. The bone growing increase and the bone canceling markers drop. So therefore, when it averaged the two, it resists bone loss. Remember, when her estrogen dropped, it is a very powerful condition to cause the bone growth to drop and the bone destruction to increase, and overall it accelerate the porosity of the bone like that. So when we gave the women, postmenopausal women, tocotrienol, this dropped very slowly. This increase of the breakdown increase resisted from increase, almost did not increase. But the bone drop thing dropped little. It didn't not drop, but dropped little. Remember, the estrogen dropped. So then when you average this and this, it is another way of saying if her bone were to be osteoporotic in a normal 15 years, it may take her 25 to 30 years to be osteoporotic like that. So it's a resistance of
Slows
the
it
bone
down.
loss. So we saw that a major finding we found in that 3 month was the antioxidant property and inflammation. In antioxidant property increase and inflammation decrease. Why is that important, Andrea? I decided to take a look. I guess I didn't pay enough attention to look at this, probably because I'm not a woman, but I decided to look at what exactly is the structure of this estrogen. So I decided to delve into this. So when I look at the estrogen chemical structure, because I'm a chemist by background, I'm pretty sure people don't talk about this. And look at it, estrogen is an antioxidant. So then it's a, oh my goodness. So all her life, once every regular 30 days or 28 days, she had this thing recycle and protect her. So at menopause, this thing is precipitously dropped and it's not anymore there. So people just talk about estrogen, good for her hormonal health, all correct. But as actually, estrogen is a chemical antioxidant that she produces. But then after menopause, this is no more. Then I said, aha, when it's no more, this is when she need antioxidant protection. Then how wonderful it is for her to take tocotrienol, which is a chemical antioxidant. I never thought to connect that piece. And with that antioxidant protection, the inflammation would drop, and minimally that would resist her bone porosity drop. So
wow,
I put it as simple as I can. I hope the audience can grasp that.
So would you say that, so that you're talking specifically around bone loss, but would that be systemic inflammation too? Again, that's inflammation is something else that we're so prone to as we go into this phase of life. A lot of people have pains in their body, or sometimes we have inflammation that we may not even know connected to our brain health. So would this help overall inflammation? Like, would it help
yes.
the C-reactive protein and the homocysteine levels? Like, would, if like we're measuring it?
Yes. It is systemic. It is systemic. We have other people who took it, like the way you say that you may have hair growth. Other people who took it, they have lupus. So they cannot have inflammation in their hand. And then they improve the pain, decrease the pain, pain, and able to hold the steering wheel and can drive. We have people in all our fatty liver study, they see C-reactive protein drop. That's in the liver thing. Yep. We also study people with a dyslipidemia. They have high cholesterol and triglyceride. They drop. They don't otherwise have fatty liver. Okay. And then we now have animal study with neuronal health, with dementia, improvement like that. We also see this would reduce inflammation to the neuron where the tocotrienol would work. So therefore, it really is systemic. It's not this part or that. Oh, we have people taking it, the tocotrienol, and would reduce the oxidation of the cataract. So that they have cat. See,
really?
So I am sure if you give me more time, I can think of other one. But that's good enough. Oh, we have people taking it, and their skin had become more supple.
Oh,
so
really?
We have that also, like that. Which is why the long time ago people put tocotrienol in skincare. It's because it helped the tocotrienol enter the skin. And it lands right there. But this is the only place where you put on it directly stays there. The otherwise is systemic. So it, but even if you take tocotrienol systemically, it would also land on the skin. And let me give one last thing. People who have inflammatory bowel movement, bowel syndrome,
IBS,
bone disease, and in, like that, they take it. I have oftentimes asked people, if you take tocotrienol, please take it with a meal. The meal will emulsify, absorb properly. Then I said, I have a sneaky one exception. If somebody have not good colon condition, like IBS, or the bad bugs are high and the good bugs are low, we have done study. When we gave the animal a tocotrienol, the good bug increased, and a bad bug decrease. So I got a strange suspicion that for those people that have conditions like that, you purposely take it on an empty stomach. Meaning, rather than have the tocotrienol absorb, which most people should do that, they should take it with a meal, with those exceptions, maybe 25% absorb. So the 75% not absorbed is going to go through the small intestine, and then you slime to, pardon me for using the word, is slime to the entire colon and is probably able to reduce inflammation there. So for you out there, if this is of importance, consider doing that. Remember, that is an exception to the rule. For everybody else, they should take it with a meal because you want it to be absorbed systemically.
No, that is a great tip. And what we'll do is we'll put it below too, and maybe the type of inflammatory bowel. So like Crohn's, you're talking about IBS, colitis, anything that leaky gut, anything that, so, okay. So anybody that has some type, if you know that you have it. So let's say somebody doesn't know, like we, you know, again, you know, Dr. Tan, we're covering like a million things here and I'm like, I'm loving it. We're going to have, I'm definitely going to have you come back because, you know, it's such great information. And then we can even dive deep into another episode. So if you have any type of digestive issue, like how would somebody know, like, let's say they, obviously they, if they know they have Crohn's, IBS or something specific, but what if generally, like a lot of us have digestive disturbances as we go into this phase of life, should we just assume and take it with food?
Yeah, they take it with food because we have done animal study and human study. On average, we saw that in the colon, the good bugs increase and the bad bug decrease. And
Oh, well,
that
that's
is,
huge too.
we've seen that consistently
Yeah.
like that. You know, other people got a swab of their poop and then they sent out for analysis. We only have the clinical study like that. Now, we have one of our clinical trials in cancer with people with colon cancer. So we'll see. Now, that's an extreme. It's not just IBS, it's all the way that they have colon. And then there is a Florida professor. I don't know if he has secure funding yet. So his precancerous condition, that polyps,
Okay.
this small little thing in the colon like that, and he's trying, and polyp is clearly underwritten by inflammation, and then they can put a scope in and they can see this.
Okay.
So if that study were to go forward, we already showed this in animal study, it consistently dropped. If that study were to go forward, then it's obvious. I think that for preventive care for people with so many holistic properties of tocotrienol, how can it be not good? You know, for tocotrienol, for metabolic health, for chronic condition, and then for other things that it help us we don't even know about, like
Yeah.
the prevention of cataract in the eye, right in the back of the retina with a lot of DHA, which is highly oxidizable, like that. With brain health, and brain is very high in DHA like that, or cardiovascular health. We have 30,000 miles of artery, and the artery need to be pliable, and the tocotrienol is able to improve the pliability of the artery and reduce the chemotaxis. When you have things floating in the artery, you don't want anything to stop in the artery. If they stop in the artery and cause inflammation, that's when you have a plaque. It is supposed
Okay.
to have blood, red blood cell, white blood cell flying past like that. And chemotaxis means chemical stopping, like taxiing, like that.
Okay.
And tocotrienol is well known, is anti-chemotaxis. It just
It
anything
keeps going
that.
on and on. It's like amazing. Like literally, I'm just thinking, like, to me, taking tocotrienol on a daily basis is and I'm gonna ask you, because you are literally the person who discovered this ingredient. You would say that it's a preventative ingredient, correct? Like this is something that we could take preventively for so many of the things that we're talking, but also it helps if you already have it to help it reverse in many cases, like to
Yeah.
help it reverse.
Okay. Now, for the few moments we have, let me tell you the protocol part. If a person is squeaky clean, so you are blessed, be grateful. You have no family history of no nothing. You are healthy. You're just squeaky clean. Then probably 1 to 200 milligram thereabout, because it depends on the
Okay.
body's weight, is good enough. Why? Because to protect the cell wall that I mentioned at the beginning, like that. So just that protection. So you have a good gated community. That one. In our study with pre-diabetes and diabetes, we'd usually have people take anywhere from 200 to 400 milligram, depending on the weight,
Okay.
and then that would help to mitigate those kind of condition. And if people would have fatty liver disease or in a cancer study, we cannot say recommend people to take. I can tell you in the clinical trial on the fatty liver condition, where people take 600 milligram, and all the cancer trial, remember the stage 4 cancer trial, they're not available options anymore. They take 900 milligram, very high dose. But right now we're going to dial down the study for people who are not stage 4, stage 1 or 2 cancer. Probably will give people somewhere between 500 to 600. So all set and done. On the lower prevention end, 100 to 200 milligram. Then most of the other ones are from 200 dial up to about 500 milligram, roughly speaking like that. So we are no longer go to the 900 milligram. The 900 milligram is currently ongoing. We are using that for treatment of stage 4 cancer patient where there are no more available option. So we give them the highest dose for which we have no ascertained safety issue. And so far, there are no safety issue. So short of that, the range is likely to be somewhere between 300 to 500, and for prevention 1 to 200. If I were you, I would take 200 milligram, would be fine. Yeah.
Is there, are there any counterindications? So obviously, you know, is there some, so for everybody who's listening, obviously speak to your doctor before anything, but are there any counterindications, that contraindications that you would say, you know, you shouldn't take this if you have this?
The only counterindication that people voice to me off and on again would be, would it thin the blood when someone is taking blood thinner like Coumadin, like that? So we cannot answer that question as directly as it's been posed, but we can answer it like this. In the Florida pancreatic cancer study, those patients were going to be on surgery a month after the pancreatic cancer were found. And then in surgery, you cut. And when you cut, if they don't clot, you got a problem. You with me on this? So they were taking tocotrienol, you know, with the intent to kill the cancer. And it did. That work was published. But in all of them, whether they're given none or given low dose all the way to the highest dose, there were no problem with healing problem having to do with clotting. That's that one. And then there was a published study with a young person who's taking it, and she, the girl, have to go to surgery, and that also have no issue with the surgery. And in none of the clinical trials on the highest dose of 900 milligram on the cancer patient, did we see bleeding problem. So that's the best way I can answer that.
Would it help with brain fog too? Because you're talking about brain health. Would, brain fog is a huge issue for us. Would it help with something like that?
I have to dial down the meaning of brain fog as memory or memory impairment, like that. If I can put it like that, we are now having studies in animal study. We're not yet graduating into clinical trial. We're not quite there. In animal study, we consistently see the tocotrienol is able to improve the memory of the animal for them to train to find out. I'll tell you one, because if I say like that, the audience, but this one is quite cute. You can go on Wikipedia, you can find, it's called Morris Swimming Maze, M-O-R-R-I-S, you can do that. Basically, if you look from the top down, it will be like a swimming pool, one meter long, like that. And then if you put the current of the water going this way, the rat will swim the opposite direction. They don't want to swim until they're tired. They'll look, and then you put a flexi glass about an inch below the water, same color as the water. They can't see the flexi glass. So you stick something on top, a color-coded sticky, and then if you don't, if they're control animal and you don't give them any tocotrienol, they will figure it out after about 5 weeks to find the flexi glass, because you put a yellow sticky, they figure it out. If you give them tocotrienol in the diet, they'll figure it out in about 2 weeks. That is very significant.
Wow.
And then if you take it off, you know how they do that? They take it off and then they cannot figure it out. So the sticky helped them to locate where the flexi glass is. And then they stop the experiment. They take the rat out, and then after 2-3 weeks, they forgot that because they're not swimming. So they put it back in, they can't locate it again. So do you retrain them, you put the sticky on, and after 2 weeks, they figure it out. And those control didn't figure it out. So that to say, you can train them and improve. Basically, they have the memory improvement of knowing this. So now with those findings, we also have Georgia State University just published last week, you know, that the tocotrienol is able to increase the synaptic. You know, you have to go from the neuron synapse to go onto the brain, like synapse passing. People in this area talk about serotonin and GABA making the happy, this and that, increase depression. So the tocotrienol increases the synapse communication. So that is particularly important for people to prevent mild dementia and dementia as we age. So it's indirectly answering your question. I have great hope. We're not yet there to do clinical study. So this is another one of those indications. So if this compound, tocotrienol from Anato, have so much benefit, why not take it? And this is, I discovered this from, this is a lab, and then I'll let you go. This just to tell you, much younger me, they have lots of hair. When I discovered this, when I went to Peru, like that, from this lovely plant, annatto. Annatto is where we get, if you go to Whole Foods or Trader Joe, you see the orangey yellow color in the cheese. That's annatto color. It's not a strange thing. It's a natural color, part of the carotene. Here's a beautiful plant. I love this plant. And then when I was in Tampa, Florida, I saw an Amazonian tree frog. The frog is about the size of a dime, and the seed of the annatto is about a grape seed. So it's very tiny. The frog is very tiny. And if you look at this plant properly, if you look at it carefully, it doesn't have a flesh. If I pretend to touch it, it stained me. That's the color.
Wow.
The plant makes the color, the seed, and it doesn't make the flesh. There's no flesh in this fruit. It deceives the birds of the air to swallow this because it's very floral and beautiful looking. The seed is looking like a fruit. So it'll poop the seed and procreate the plant. So the plant makes the tocotrienol to make the seed look like a fruit. So they conserve energy in not making flesh. So I am just exceedingly lucky, Andrea. I'm not a medicine hunter as such. I was there looking for something else in my life. And then I discovered this by accident. And now my passion is to tell people why this compound is good. Remember, sometimes we get it in the head. The plant makes things for human being. We got it wrong. The plant never makes things for you and I. We just got it in our head. The plant make it for themselves, you know?
Exactly.
So we are just lucky. We're just lucky that I'm able to uncover this. And these have huge blessings to our life. So if you hear this as a blessing for your Christmas and New Year, share this with other people. It is real. And if you want to, you can download. I wrote this book as a labor of love. It's free. You can download this. So if you can put the truth about vitamin
E, put a link
E,
below. Yep.
And then on the side you can say berry 10 is spelled BARRIE 10.com/book. Okay. If you do this, you can download the book. I put down all the publication, all the different things they say, more so than the 1 hour allows.
Well, and I'm excited because we partnered with you to create Toco E, which is our own Morpheus product. So I'm so excited, which is why I was so excited to do this with you, because I've been, you know, like I love the ingredient. I love the ingredient. And now we are offering Toco E to our audience. So you can, we're putting a link below. You can purchase it directly off our website, which is amazing, as part of our Morpheus lineup of supplements. And I'm always looking for ingredients that can help women and individuals in this phase of life. So for me, you know, as you're talking, I'm like, check that box. That box gets checked off. That box, like, it checks off so many boxes. So it's like kind of like we're taking daily multivitamin, a multi-mineral. Well, Toco E would be, you know, tocotrienols would be a daily thing as well, because it helps with so much. Dr. Tan, thank you. This was so informative. And I'm so happy that I got to meet you and speak to you. And we appreciate you sharing all of this incredible information and all your research. 100 studies on animals and over 20 human clinicals. I mean, absolutely incredible on this, which is another reason that I absolutely love this ingredient.
Wow. Thank you so much.
I love how passionate Dr. Tan is. I mean, to me, the fact that he discovered this ingredient is so amazing. And I love that he talked about all the different conditions that it helps with. I knew about NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. I knew about heart health. I knew about hair growth. I've been taking it, like I said, for, you know, over a year now, probably close to a year and a half. And I see baby hairs all the time. So I know it works. I love the fact that it helps with insulin resistance, brain health, he talked about. I mean, the list goes on and on. So to me, such an incredible product. And for those of you who follow me on TikTok and who are, you know, subscribers to our newsletter, you know how particular I am about the supplements that we take, what we put in and on our bodies in this phase of life. We need to be discerning. So for me, this product is a no-brainer. I take it daily, and I would encourage you to try it out as well. The link is below to our Toco Morpheus supplement. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me, and I can also pass them on to Dr. Tan if I don't know the answers. So if you enjoyed today's interview, please share it, because the more you share shows you care. And as always, I appreciate you listening. Please rate and review our podcast. I would be extremely grateful, and I'll see you at the next interview.